carnival magic. The excitement, the thrill, the adventure of the carnival.
Morehead, be careful!
You want the chimp? You're looking at the guy who can get him.
The most exciting, non-stop, fun-filled carnival that's ever come to town. Carnival magic. It'll knock you out. See Alexander the Great, the talking chimpanzee, drive everyone crazy in Carnival Magic.
What am I doing talking to a monkey?
Alex is on the run, turning the carnival upside down in Carnival Magic. A madcap monkey romp. Carnival Magic. The most amazing thing you'll ever see. A talking chimpanzee.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, are we rolling? Good. Forgotten Horrors Podcast, take one. Do the appropriate music. No. I said the appropriate music. That's more like it. This is Mike Price, welcoming you to the Forgotten Horrors Podcast, a blatant exploitation of our new series of Forgotten Horrors movie books. It is my pleasure now to introduce John Woolley, without whom none of this would be possible. And now, the acclaimed author of Soul Soup for the Chickens and others too humorous to mention, John Woolley.
And you know that those tones belong to my co-conspirator and writer of a great many things, Mr. Michael H. Price, the originator with George Turner, the Forgotten Horrors series, which is why this podcast even exists. Michael, how are you?
Hey. Oh, just glad to be here.
And are you pretty stoked after watching Carnival Magic?
Boy, what a picture.
It is a picture,
what
isn't it?
What a picture.
Well, I'd like for you to go ahead and start out with your observations about it, if you would. You can kind of start anywhere, and I'll just jump in.
Well, it's among other things, and the question being, what are you guys doing talking about a kiddie picture about the carnival? I said, well, in the first place, it's not really a kiddie picture.
Boy, it's G-rated, but that's not necessarily makes it a kid picture.
Exactly.
Right.
It has elements that might suggest a receptiveness toward a family audience. But basically, this is Al Adamson, one of the most adventurous and semi-perverse intellects in the low-budget scene. It's really, I think at heart more than anything else, it's a mad doctor picture.
Okay, would you like to explain that a little bit?
Well, you've got a carnival, you've got a magician mind-reading thing, you've got an animal trainer, and there is a chimpanzee named Alexander the Great, who seems to be more intelligent than most of the human players.
Exactly.
Even down to the ability to speak in short bursts and raspberries.
And sound a little bit like a blues man.
Yeah, he's got kind of that old, worn out,
yep,
Southerner voice.
Yeah, he does indeed.
Very not a cute chimpanzee at all.
No.
But not a menacing.
No.
Figure either, and when the revelation is made that the chimp can, well, he's like I say a smart character. The carnival, which has been failing economically, decides to elevate the chimp and his human partner to star billing, and things get turned around. Of course, the animal trainer is envious and conspires to sell the ape to a clinic,
mm-hmm,
which is where the mad doctor element,
right,
comes in.
And we don't want to give too much away, but there's also threats of vivisection. There is spousal abuse, and attempted chimp suicide. If I'm reading,
mm-hmm,
it right, again,
well,
not to give too much away.
You can read it any number of ways.
Yes,
because
you
it's
can.
An Al Adamson picture.
You certainly can. You're absolutely right.
It's just a very weird, semi-professional picture. Adamson had a family background in commercial filmmaking, dating way back to when he was a child and kind of a semi-actor in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
He was the son of an old-time cowboy movie star whose name was Victor Adamson, but who many Western fans know as Denver Dixon.
Right, and wasn't he a mix at one point? Didn't he take a mix name at one point, too?
He also assumed the imitation cowboy hero name of Art Mix.
Art Mix, that's what it was.
Which was calculated to sound a whole lot like Tom Mix.
And it does.
And it does. And Victor the Elder Adamson would put out these posters. Sometimes, different players at different times played Art Mix. But the ads invariably would have Art and little tiny letters and Mix and great big boxcar letters.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a sort of a carnival hucksterism attitude built into Al Adamson's career. It's only fitting he should make a picture called Carnival Magic, which I believe was intended to either launch a series or at least get a sequel.
It was. There's a thing at the end that says to look, you know, to watch for more Carnival Magic. I'm still watching
I doubt many people ever saw the picture in the first place.
No, he didn't get much of a distribution, did he? Alvin Feltner didn't get much of a distribution on it.
No, and Feltner was kind of like the brains behind the film. The film was indeed lost for a stretch, for a long stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Made in 1966. No, I'm sorry, 81.
Mm-hmm.
It looks
mm-hmm.
like a 60s picture.
It does look like a 60s picture, yeah.
And mm-hmm. more about that in a moment, but of course it ran into the old Ed Wood problem of the producer being unable to pay the laboratory
mm-hmm.
fees.
Mm-hmm.
So the film gets held hostage. The film gets sparse distribution. Many prints get mutilated, destroyed, whatever happens to orphaned films. And finally, years later, somebody stumbles across a clean print in a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
I think my first knowledge of its being discovered was when Turner Classic Movies had a kind of a world premiere.
Wow!
on their late night show,
right.
TCM Underground,
mm-hmm.
and then of course those hack vandals on Mystery Science Theater
mm-hmm.
gave it a razzing, but that
mm-hmm.
doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, this film has many debits and demerits. Why subject it to razzing?
Well, it's like punching a snowman. Yeah. I mean, I get it, but yeah.
Yeah,
it's
like,
easy.
Okay, this film means very well. It attempts to tell a story. It, you know what it reminds me of?
Mm.
Our old pal Dave Friedman's picture, She Freak.
You know, it does remind you of She Freak, very much so.
It's got that same, it hasn't the viciousness of She Freak,
mm-hmm.
which of course was Friedman's riposte to Todd Browning's
mm-hmm.
Freaks,
mm-hmm.
many years after Freaks had
mm-hmm.
come and gone. But it's got that same shabby air about it.
Well, it's got the verisimilitude. It's really what carnivals are like.
It's like a documentary account of a carnival. You would never see, if this film had been made, even by Adamson, even if Adamson had made it himself at a large studio with many resources, I guarantee you the audience at the Magician's Show would never have looked so totally bored
uh-huh.
as they do in this film. Because higher caliber studios and directors associated with the better financed projects
right.
know better than to let things just sit there. And those poor people in the audience, they look, well, when do we get paid? When's the lunch truck get here? And so that lends it all by itself a documentary-like aspect.
It does. And according to Elvin Feltner, did you see the little interview with him that's on the reissue, or that's on the DVD. There was a short interview with him.
No, I haven't gone through that yet. I figure he probably had maybe champagne tastes on a beer budget.
He did. He claimed that all of those people that were in the audience were people who had actually not gotten any money or any freebies or anything. They had actually paid to get into the carnival. Now, that's what he says. Now, he also, you know, you see him and you see a guy who basically executive produced two pictures. That one and back in the 60s, that regional film Teenage Strangler, which I think was also Terror in the Night. It was a West Virginia picture made in West Virginia.
Sure.
And, you know, he was one of these guys, probably had another job. Who knows what it was? But he was around the fringes of the business and loved it and, you know, dipped his toe into the exploitation film waters a couple of times. And I'm sure he thought that, because Teenage Strangler was obviously not a family film, but I'm sure he thought making this G-rated film, maybe this would be the ticket. This would be his ticket to break it into the business.
And I obviously there are things, you know, the Motion Picture Association, they have a seeing eye dog that occasionally goes snoozing on the job, and I think that seeing eye dog must have been incapacitated the day this picture came up for review, because it's like, okay, how about the sexual predator in the film? Mm-hmm. How about the arranged marriage?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this obviously a vivisectionist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a vivisectionist.
Very disturbing in many ways, a lot of fun in some others, and just a beautiful picture of Adamson's incessant desire to branch beyond his known territory.
And what makes it even better, I think, in that case, is the fact that Regina Carroll, this is her last film, his wife, is basically has the main female lead, not the ingenue lead, but she's got the main female lead. Now, allegedly, according to Elvin Feltner, that was supposed to be played, that part was supposed to be played by Eileen Fulton from As the World Turns. His idea, of course, was to get these soap opera stars in it, because his hero, Don Stewart, was a huge star at the time of The Guiding Light. He was also a guy who didn't quit his day job and stayed with The Guiding Light even after he made that film. But there's a lot of interesting things to me, Michael, that I've not been able to find out. One is how Al got called to do this in the first place by Feltner. And number two, why Don Stewart, a couple of years later, did Al Adamson's only other G-rated film, Lost, with Sandra Dee. And, you know, he's in both of those pictures, Don Stewart. Isn't Don Stewart's a pretty good presence in Carnival
Magic.
He's
got a good face. He's got a good face. He's got a kind of an unrealistic line delivery.
Well, yeah. There's some unrealistic lines in there, too. So.
Which is the province of the soap opera actor.
Right,
you never
see
naturalistic acting on the soaps. That's funny. When I worked with Adamson on his last picture, and an unfinished picture called Beyond That Earth.
Right, we've talked about that,
We had a nice meeting. I was kind of apprehensive because I had been uncharitable to him in the first Forgotten Horrors book,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because I kind of resented his exploiting some of the old timers in that Frankenstein versus Dracula,
or was it
Dracula versus Frankenstein?
Right, right.
Yeah, like who's keeping score?
Right.
But the we hit it off real well. I was out there kind of an observer, and I ended up doing assistant director work on this kind of a semi-documentary about flying saucers.
Right. I think Stevie Ashlock, you know, was involved with that. That was Al's girlfriend at the time of his passing, and she had family in the Tulsa area, and she came into the, we may have talked about this before at some point, she came to the Tulsa World Newsroom when I was there, and brought some probably some of the stuff that you'd help shoot to show me.
Probably.
Because I guess they'd sent her there from, who was doing publicity at the time? Was it Tim Ferrante, wasn't it? Was doing publicity
for International. Tim Ferrante. And of course, there was some hoopla stirred up by our old pal Tom Rinone.
That's true, yeah. But I think it ended being Tim Ferrante that sent her my way. He was doing the publicity for Independent International, and that was Sam Sherman's out. But, you know, I was the same way with Al Adamson. I did one of the last interviews for the record with him before his death for Fangoria, and just a soft-spoken, nice man.
Very down home.
Yes.
We take to task those who give a rough time to the low-budget filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean we keep the low-budget filmmakers safe from ever getting on the hook.
Right.
And when I see the exploitation of classy old stars, such as Adamson was, I guess, guilty of doing, I kind of get a little edgy.
That was really Sherman, wasn't it, though, Michael? I mean, you know,
that
with
was probably more Sherman than Adamson. It was that conversation that we had over dinner that night that got that really kind of an indignant, thoughtful comment from Adamson, where he said, "It's not our fault that we weren't capable of giving those guys what they deserved." And of course, it wasn't their fault.
Right.
He had a job to do. I found Adamson to be just as nice as his leading men are usually too nice for their circumstances.
Mm-hmm. The Gary Kents of the world. That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I remember something with Sam Sherman, who I've had a chance to talk to on several occasions, and he said, you know, at one point when they're making Dracula versus Frankenstein, he said, well, he says, "Mr. Nash, I know this isn't PRC." And Nash says, "You bet your ass it's not." But you think about that, and he didn't even say MGM or 20th Century Fox or RKO. He said PRC, the runt of the litter, when it, to quote another writer that who wrote B Pictures, Don, what's the name of the guy that wrote the great B movies book? Don Miller. Don Miller called PRC the runt of the litter, so we want to give credit where credit's due. But, you know, he was giving these guys work. I mean, keep in mind, Sam Sherman had been the guy really behind Screen Thrills Illustrated for Warren and celebrating the old Western guys. And then, of course, when he did the Stewardess pictures, he had Bob Livingston, and he had, you know, what was left of the Ritz brothers, and he had all of those. He had Yvonne DiCarlo, I think, was in one of those. And he loved him and gave him work. And that's not, as you mentioned, that's not unlike Ed Wood giving work to the old guys that needed it or wanted it or both,
and,
you know.
And benefiting through the exploitation to whatever extent was possible.
Right. It's what, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mixed blessing at best, but probably not a 100% curse either.
No, it's absolutely not. I mean, it's symbiotic, I guess, isn't it? If you really think about it.
Yeah.
And I think with Don Stewart in this film, I think it was the same thing. They were exploiting his soap opera stardom in exchange for his making this picture, which I got to tell you, I've seen it twice now. And I really, really like it. I don't know why.
It's a fun picture.
Yeah.
It casts that same, like a lot of the lesser Adamsons. I can't say it's never a dull moment because there are some lulls.
Yes, there are.
Some doldrums. But it's a picture of great fascination. Especially for those of us who grew up with connections to the carnival racket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which you did.
Which I did, yeah, exactly. And It's like, whoa, that could be, that could almost be one of the traveling Texas outfits.
Mm-hmm. The Stony Martin Carnival. And, you know, Mark Weston, who plays Stony Martin, is also the scriptwriter. As a matter of fact, he wrote several TV series or episodes of several TV series. And this, I think, is at least IMDb says it's his only credit. Of course, it's probably not, but his only acting credit, I should say. But he has a pretty extensive bunch of writing credits. You just wonder, again, this is one of those films that makes you want to dig a little deeper and find out what was going on, like behind the scenes, why he thought of Al Adamson, of all the directors in the world. Why would this guy think of Al Adams? I mean, I think, you know, he had directors down there. Al Adams was another Southern cat, you know. He wasn't like the down south, like William Griffey or somebody like that. He, you know, who probably the guy knew, probably Elvin Feltner knew. How did the connection come together? That to me is a fascinating question.
And what kind of company was this? I think we know, but I would like to know more about it. I would like to know what advertising agency designed that incredibly amateurish one
sheet. Oh, it's horrible. Yes, isn't that awful? And was that, and did they actually even get a distributor, or was he like bicycling the prints? What happened?
I am kind of at a loss. The production company, bear with me a second, I'm leafing through some notes. The production company really didn't have any distribution connections. I would suspect that whoever distributed it was a Superman fan, because the name of the production company was Krypton.
I saw that. Yes, Krypton Productions. Now, would that have been Feltner's production company, or would that have been the distribution company? I don't know.
Well, sometimes they're interchangeable. Right. I think it was released on a state's rights basis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in 81, you could still do that. That's just right, a couple years before the dawning of the VHS tape era, right? The home video era.
Yeah, you could get away with booking your own film on a, what they used to call four-walling it. That is, renting the four walls of the theater for as long as a film could play.
The Charles B. Pierce's stuff did so well with all of
his.
He did a lot of four-walling with those Bigfoot movies, Legend of Boggy Creek and those films. You know?
Oh, yeah. And the exploitation pictures, especially, of course, that goes all the way back to the sex hygiene pictures.
Of course it does, with the Kroger Babb and those guys and the 40 Thieves, right, that Dave Friedman used to talk to us about all the time, the guys that would just cut each other's throats to get a print, you know, and bicycle it around. And I don't know, obviously he talks a little bit in the interview about getting it in 40 theaters or something, but I think it's over a number of months or years. Do you remember that, Joey, where he talks about getting it in this number of theaters? Irvin Feltner does, and you know, and he says, "Yeah, we got it in all these theaters," but then it's like maybe over a period of 3 or 4 years, he took it from one theater to the next. It's got some sort of a weird charm that I really like, because it is not, as you say, it's like an attempt to make a G-rated family picture set in a seedy carnival is basically what we're looking at here, with a chimp that can talk.
or at least mumble.
Or mumble.
Some of it's articulate. It's like this is, the chimp basically appears kind of not necessarily bored, but surely fed up with the experience. You know, his answers to questions are pretty darn grouchy.
They are. Yeah, he's pretty cranky.
Chimpanzees are very intelligent creatures, and they can be dangerous. So this one, you know, this one isn't any Snooky by any means.
No.
Snooky himself had a hell of a temper.
Right, exactly. Well, there's also plenty of philosophical lines in this, which I really enjoy. Things like, we're all different in our own way. You know, it's all of the kind of things I believe that is Markov telling Bud, the girl who, of course, becomes surprise, a young lady at some point. with the publicist for the carnival, which I can't imagine what kind of money that guy's knocking down. You look at that carnival, and it's like, you know, I hope that's not your day gig, because that could be a pretty tough way to make a living. But there's just a lot of quasi-philosophical lines in the picture. I just love it.
I'm worried.
What about us?
No. Stoney, he doesn't talk to me.
Miss, he's got to realize you got a life of your own. Can't be his buddy forever. And Markov says conforming to what others want robs us of our most important treasure, remaining ourselves.
I'm just afraid of being left alone.
Hey, and open your eyes.
I'd rather close them.
But, you know, the more I see it, the more I like it. It's a, I would, and honestly, it's like any picture, Michael. We watch these old pictures, and we watch the PRC pictures, and at one point, you say to yourself, I would like to live in that world. And yeah. I feel that way about Carnival Magic. God help me. I do.
Well, that's
I absolutely
what
feel that
that's, way. That's, of course, Ed Wood would forswear any connection. I'm sorry, Al Adamson would forswear any connection with Ed Wood, because Ed was really not aware of his limitations.
Right, right.
Al, of course, was very aware of his limitations,
yeah.
And he just kept on working anyway, and he tried and tried and tried to get more accomplished, which he did on many occasions.
Yes, he did.
But the one thing that fascinates me about such pictures is that the Ed Woods and the Al Adamsons and so forth, is that they attempt, let's say their reach exceeds their grasp.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
They're really striving to say something. And I have no doubt but what a lot of that dialogue is original with Al.
Well, it could be, and, you know, it becomes then the difference, doesn't it, between, say, Al Adamson and Edgar Ulmer. They're both working with very restrictive budgets, but one, or even for that matter, the Corman Factory, where he figured out that if you could have some starlet pop her top about every 10 pages of script, you could get all kinds of liberal commentary and polemic in your pictures, in your nurse and your cheerleader pictures, you know.
Exactly.
But you're right. I mean, although you look at Ed Woods, I didn't know him. I don't know why I'm calling him Ed. You look at Ed Woods, Glenn or Glenda, and he did accomplish something there. If nothing else,
sure.
You know, then he certainly didn't normalize anything.
He succeeded at demonstrating just what a well-intentioned crackpot he was.
Exactly. it's a wonderful way to put it.
I mean, all due respect, and of course I have used that term shabby dignity in reference to Wood sometimes, say, many years before, but you gotta admire the gumption it takes just to put that out there as though you knew what you were saying, like the soliloquies or monologues in Wood's script for Orgy of the Dead. Another picture that kind of has that documentary-like feel of this Carnival Magic.
It does. I think Carnival Magic is much more benign. There's not a sense to me in Carnival Magic of any real evil existing, you know, under those tents and all of this, that it's kind of out in front. Whereas with Orgy of the Dead, you kind of think they're not really telling you the whole story. You know what I mean?
No.
I mean, it's just you're not seeing it all, right? It's just...
Now, well, of course, and that has a lot to do with the hovering presence of the dear old beloved Uncle Forey Ackerman, who every day seems to bring a new revelation about the creepiness of that fellow.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah,
oh,
I guess that's
right. He's getting his own Me Too moment posthumously.
Really? Well, then,
You
know, I know that he was not, that you saw the dark side of him in terms of having him as your agent. I know that certainly happened with you. But, you know, this is not, you know, Carnival Magic, for all of its weirdness and creepiness, is not a dark picture to me. It's
not a picture that means to do you harm.
Mm-mm.
It's got a dramatic conflict that really worked for me. And I was like, well, what are they going to do to that? What are they going to do to that grouchy old chimpanzee?
I know.
But, you know, I mean, a picture that can make you care about a surly ape. Go figure that. But
That's right.
But Al Adamson did not have a secret life.
Right.
I mean, you knew the guy. What you saw was what you got.
Yeah, it was right out there.
He had his, when he felt the need to make a movie for an adult, maybe not adults only, but for a grown-up crowd, he was very frank and forthcoming about his tastes in erotica and
mm-hmm.
violence and
mm-hmm.
what have you,
mm-hmm.
and when he tried to make a traditional horror movie, I think he was really trying to do that with portions of Dracula versus Frankenstein.
Absolutely, he was.
But that was a hybrid film.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, as so many of Alan's and Sam Sherman's pictures
mm-hmm.
were. They'd start
mm-hmm.
out as a detective picture, then kind of maybe change course and try to be a comedy, and then
mm-hmm.
turn into a splatter picture or whatever.
And then you see all three of those things in the final product.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. and that is one of the things that makes them so blasted fascinating.
That's exactly right.
In a more traditional or conventional picture, such as the one Al did unwittingly with mob financing called Blood of Dracula's Castle,
mm-hmm.
you really do see the attempt to honor the imperatives of generations that came before.
Mm-hmm, with Alex Darcy and Paula Raymond's characters especially.
And of course John Carradine looking bored mm-hmm. as hell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. John did everything but look at his watch in that picture.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
But the beauty of Adamson, I think, was not so much that he was a great filmmaker. He was just a damned stubborn filmmaker,
mm-hmm.
and he had the gumption to keep on keeping mm-hmm. on when everybody told him, stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a fascinating picture, and I would really recommend it. I don't know you can buy it. I don't think it's online anywhere, but I would really recommend people seeing it, and because there's just not a whole lot of pictures out there like it. If nothing else, and that I kind of mean that in a good way. All right, Michael, tell me what's going on in our what's hot and what's not in our
little
books.
Our little corner of the asylum.
Yeah.
Well, I've wrapped the revised edition now of George Turner's book, The Making of King Kong.
Good. I knew you were working on
that. Got that shifted off to the publisher over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
and all the better for it. I've tend to be very selective dealing with outside publishers since we've had such good success at our own imprint.
Mm-hmm.
But when approached with the right offer and the right publisher, and it's like, yeah, give it a try. So there'll be a new edition of The Making of King Kong. Significant revisions, not a total overhaul, but some new art and some insights that were not available to George Turner in the original edition, nor to me when I did the first revision nearly 20 years ago.
Great. And when will that be out, then?
I think they're trying to fast-track it up in New York. It's an outfit called Pulp Hero Press. They're affiliated with the Disney organization.
Okay, good, yeah.
And this is cool. So I expect to see a proof during the summer, and I'm sure it'll be on the racks by, at an Amazon.com near you before
that's
the end of
that's
the year.
Right. Well,
We're just steaming along. You and I've got some irons in the far.
We got some irons in the far. That's right. But we got some. People are still discovering the forgotten horrors. they've Forgotten Horrors books, and I'm just very excited about all of that. And I've heard from some people that have picked them up and then gone back and picked one of them up and then gone back and started picking up the rest of them. You know, that's what we like to see. If you enjoy the Forgotten Horrors podcast, you can have basically the same sort of thing set on the back of the commode in a printed form. And we would like to encourage you to visit Amazon.com and look at what we've got, and also visit, what is it, Amazon Prime, Joey? Amazon Prime, where we've been having some downloads on the Bill Boyce Money Actor documentary that we did about the star of Slime People, who was a good friend of ours, and people are downloading that, and we encourage that. We encourage you picking up those Forgotten Horrors books and just look at the Michael H. Price and John Woolley stuff together, collectively and separately. There may be something there for just about everybody. Or at least just about everybody who would be interested in listening to this podcast, I would think.
Yeah, but we'll never top Carnival Magic.
We will never top Carnival Magic. We tip our hats to that. And Michael, next week, or next time around, we're going to be doing, what is it, Joey?
The Ghost That Walks Alone.
The Ghost That Walks Alone.
It throws me off. I feel like...
You and I have a fondness, Michael, and a lot of the listeners do too, apparently, for those Paramount B horror pictures, and we love them too. So we're gonna take a look at that.
Not to mention that this one stars Dagwood Bumstead himself.
Exactly, and a rare turn away from Blondie. So until then, thank you very much for listening to the Forgotten Horrors podcast. We really do appreciate it, and please feel free to contact us on the Forgotten Horrors podcast website. Right, Joey?
The group on Facebook.
The group on Facebook. I knew that.
Oh, yeah.
It was the group on Facebook. Thank you very much, and thanks to our producer, Joey Hambry. Michael, we'll be back to you soon.
Oh, yeah.